This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Visit FUBARradio.com for more details.
Ollie and Si on FUBAR Radio.
This is FUBAR, Ollie and Simon here. Is that what I say? It's about right, isn't it?
Yeah, I would have thought so. Yeah.
We take a look back at the last 7 days on planet Earth, and we'll get into Twitter news shortly to find out what's been trending worldwide. Big things over the last week. Well, you did the Great London Swim.
Yeah, did the Great London Swim. That was my third great swim of the year. There's five in the Great Swim series. I did three of them this year. It's a double-edged sword because the visibility is awful because it's so disgusting. So you can't see like the end of your arm.
But there must be
when your head's down with your goggles, you can't see your fingers. It's that
there
muggy.
Must be a...
But that's a double-edged sword because then I can't see all the rubbish that's below. So it's quite good.
But there must be a point where you're swimming along and you're all in wetsuits in horrible water in the middle of London. You're thinking, I've paid to be here. What am I doing?
There was a bit of a grim moment when I was like, oh, what's that on my leg? And it was a carrier bag. And that was just a little bit of a, just for a split second, just like, what am I doing here? Like, that's just,
I imagine they don't use that on the website.
No, that's not the picture. They erase that out, copy and paste some more C over.
But a guy coming,
pollution.
Like, a really like handsome guy, really well built in a wetsuit, walking out
Me.
Of the Thames, looking like he's conquered it, but he's just got a Kit Kat wrapper on his face.
Yeah, that is pretty grim, but it's been a good series. Like, the London one was, I was a bit more nervous about it because the route is a trickier one. It's more zigzaggy, it's not just a loop. And also, you know, it's London, and you think, like, getting there and all the other ones, like Lake Windermere, when I did the North one, you just sort of park up and get on with it, whereas London, it's trickier to get there and sort of do it. The adrenaline was harder to get up for it as much because I'd sort of been seen there and done it three times. It's the same people who organise it, the same warm-up act, the same everything. So it felt really quite like going through the motions. So it's hard to get the adrenaline back up. There's always a really depressing moment when you all line up, you have your electric... Well, it's like you're like someone on bail because you've got like an electric tag around your foot, and that's what sort of bleeps you at the beginning and end so you know your time.
There probably was someone on the run in London. They just tagged in as they went through.
You queue up to get your tags, and then they write your number on your head.
Yeah,
on
in case
your
you
hat.
Go missing, and to find your body.
And on your hands,
yeah.
So that they can identify the body if you do drown.
Brilliant.
Which is quite grim. Did the swim, you come back out. This one was particularly rubbish because there was no tag machine in the water. So when you finished... At the previous races, you finished, you swam across the line and it would bleep, just like when you run across the line in a marathon or something. Whereas this, you had to run up steps out of the dock and then to a finish line. When I got there, the bleeping machine for your chip had broken. So there was a queue just waiting to get your chip done. And then when we got there, the system was down, so they were having to write our details down by hand, pen and paper.
On the finish line, there was a queue.
So I didn't get my time for hours later. It's okay, though. You go and get your little bag, you get a medal, you get a T-shirt, all those sorts of things. I always wear the medal and the T-shirt for the rest of the day, just a little thing that I always do. And in London, I'm thinking, I was joking with my mates who came to watch me, like, oh, this will get me in places. Don't worry, like, we'll get free drinks. We went on the Underground, and my Oyster hadn't topped up, and I was coming out the other side, and I was like, oh, mate, can I top this up? And he goes, well, you can't top it up the other side, so have you come on this train, have you sort of come through this illegally, have you not paid? And I was like, no, I thought it was fully topped up, I'm really sorry. And he goes, is that a medal? And I was like, oh, yeah, no, I've just been doing the great London Swim. And he goes, go on then, son, I'll let you through. And he let me through after all that. My faith in humanity is restored.
Relatively uneventful week for me, really.
Mm.
Actually, I did laugh.
You've had a dicky belly as well, haven't you?
Oh, I tell you what, I haven't felt right at all.
No.
And I think it's karma related. I cycled out with some friends to a local pub last Friday. And because we live out in quite a rural area, it's like a real... It's just so lucky that we can do that.
Mm.
Just like there's a place called the Greenway.
Oh, yeah.
And went out across there, and then we went to a place called Welford and sat by the river. And it was really poor service in the pub, and the food was awful. And maybe that's why I've got a dicky belly now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was really bad. I won't name the pub. But I think it's
like two pubs in the place.
I think it's slightly karma related, because it was like, it was still light while we were there in the evening. It was still quite balmy. And there was a guy, his a husband and wife cycling, and they got all the gear on. Because I have two bikes. I have my pub bike and I have my, like, cycling bike.
Right.
So one that I go, sort of proper clip in, I wear Lycra on. The other one's just, like, flip down handles, rusty, cycle home drunk on it. Perfect.
Right. Yeah, makes sense.
So they were on one of these, like, seriously nice bikes. And he clipped in with one foot and then pushed off, but not quite hard enough, and clipped the other in and sort of came to a stop. And there was this beautiful moment where he's perfectly balanced, but realised that he needed to
How long does it take to unclip?
You can do it really, really quickly, but you can never panic and do it, because you need to slide. You can't lift up or down. You just have to slide across.
Right.
And there was just this beautiful inevitability to the situation.
Mm.
Like, you knew he was going to come off.
You knew what was going to happen before it happened.
And he knew it was going to happen. It was just a matter of time.
I love that.
And it was this slow timber moment as he went over. He couldn't clip out.
Right.
And he just, halfway down, he stopped panicking. Because he knew it was...
Was it at least by, like, some grass or anything?
No. It's on the concrete, in front of everyone. And I just...
Lost it.
I just lost it. And it was awful, because his wife looked at me. You know, she didn't even know if he was injured or not at this point. And I'd already gone. Like, I was already... And he's still attached to the bike on his side. He's still clipped in like a turtle. So maybe that's why.
That's why you've got a dicky belly now.
Maybe it's
karma. Karma. Back around.
There's nothing calm about it. And it wasn't a korma. It was a dodgy piece of beef, I think. Anyway. So that happened. Watched the racing on Saturday. My friend's house backs onto the local race course.
Very, very well to do. This is lovely little... Back of the garden, watch of the races.
Yeah, it is just about 3 metres from the actual track.
It's crazy.
It's annoying because you can't see the big screen, so you don't really know what's going on. But if you open your iPad up and get, like, the app betting app, you get all the info there.
Mm-hmm.
One of my friends is a jockey called William Kennedy, and he had 5 big wins last week.
Right.
He's on remarkable form at the moment.
Will he do, like, the biggest races in the country?
Yeah, so on...
Did you do anything at Ascot the other week?
Yeah, no, he'll be at Cheltenham, he'll be at Ascot, he'll be at all of them, Aintree. Mm. But it is weird that you just turn up and ride a horse sometimes that you've never met before. And he's just so relaxed about it.
When you say meet a horse, surely a horse is a horse, just get on it and go.
No, it's not like a bike though, is it?
Well, it clearly is, because that's what they do. They even, just turn up and get on it.
Even like a new car, isn't it? You get in it and it's just, you need to just... like, learn where the indicators or the headlights are.
No, it's a horse.
No, wait, what I'm saying is, Simon... Okay, so, but a car, they're all roughly the same, but they don't have temperaments, don't have personality, do they?
Mm.
Which, of course, horses do.
But how much can they tame that? You know, if the horse decides he doesn't want to race, that's it, it doesn't race.
I know, but what Will was telling me, saying, for example, some horses, he said, they don't like being at the front of the pack. They just don't like it. So with a horse like that, you'd have him further back in the mix,
right,
and then at the last minute, give him a push. Whereas some horses get spooked being in the pack. They just want to get out front and they'll stay out front.
So when you turn up, the trainer goes, here's your horse. It's Billy McBridle. They all have ridiculous names like that. And then they say, right, this is it. Get on. He doesn't like being at the front. Go in the middle. Go for it.
Simple as that.
Yeah.
When I first met Will, I had a few drinks and I didn't know anything about horse racing at that point. And I said to him, I went, so you just turn up and hold on.
It does look like that, doesn't it? Because it looks like they're so at the mercy. And also, surely you'd think any jockey can whip a horse a bit.
You can only whip it 11 times.
In the whole race?
Yeah, that's the rules. So you get disqualified if you whip it more than that.
So I guess that is where an element of skill comes into it, in judging when you need to do your 11. Because you might do 3 halfway round.
Yeah, and also just...
And then you might do the last.
Yeah, knowing what the horse has got in it, when you can go, when you can't, when you can leave the pack, you know, all that sort of stuff. There's a lot to it. But the interesting thing was, he said they all chat, like, on the way around. Like, they'll be...
Really?
Yeah,
are they not out of breath? Because
they're obviously crazy fit.
Yeah.
You know, but he said, yeah, no, we'll just be chatting amongst the... Like, one of them will be like, here comes a big one.
Really?
Yeah. You going to that drinks do tonight?
Pint after. Oi, mate! Pint after. Oh, he's too far. He's too far back. He's gone. He's not going to win.
Yeah, that's it.
Are they allowed to bet on the races?
Nice goggles you got there.
Are they allowed to bet on them?
No. Can't be like, it's like in radio, you can't take part in the competitions, can you?
No, well, you say yeah. that. I've rigged a few
of
my time.
Not saying that his friends can't bet, though, when he's got a good horse going it is fascinating, then. What a cool job.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. But the downside is you are going to be the shortest one of all your friends.
And your hips, like Will's 30 and his hips are going.
Really, already?
Not working. All right, we'll get into Twitter news next. Sebastian's with us, qualified newsreader.
Hello.
Trending across the world for the last 7 days. Let's turn to Twitter then. What are the big hashtags?
Variety to choose from. Starting, Ollie, I think we'll start with one which is quite close to home for you, because I believe that by some unfortunate coincidence, this is a relative of yours, isn't it? Hashtag Tim Farron.
Yep. Cousin by marriage.
Really? So what, he married into your family or you married into his? Or?
His dad married into Ollie's family.
Really? What was he thinking?
So his dad had him with someone else and then his dad married Ollie's auntie.
Yeah, so I've got two cousins, Robert and Tim. Robert's...
Stepson.
No.
Tim's stepson is...
No, Rob, they're brothers, stepbrothers. That makes sense.
Right.
Robert and Tim are stepbrothers. My yeah. two cousins, yeah, and yeah. he's my cousin by marriage.
This is the worst episode of Who Do You Think You Are ever, isn't it? Anyway, if
you've only met him like a couple of times, though.
Yeah, yeah, we're not close. I mean, the you know, my sister, when she did work experience in London, is that she sent a message to my uncle being like, oh, I spoke to my uncle and said, oh, I'm doing work experience in London. And she rang Tim and he had an apartment in Westminster. So when she was 18, she went and crashed there for a week.
That's bizarre. So when was the last time you spoke to him or saw him?
A few years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not terribly close to my sort of outer family, because they all live up north in Preston.
Yeah.
I should be more so, really.
Yeah. Well, just to explain, if he thought that joining the Gallant family was a mistake, then he's made an even bigger one now. He's been elected leader of the Liberal Democrats.
You know what?
Of course, he was one of the only few to save his seat.
Yeah, he's now leading seven other people.
And he had the largest vote for his constituency out of all of his fellow Lib Dem MPs.
He did. They're now all going on their summer holidays, so that's that taxi booked now, for the coast.
I'm obviously very biased, but I think he comes across incredibly well.
What, your cousin? Yeah.
I'm sure. So does mine. She's not a political leader, but she does a mean curry. The reason I picked this is because obviously, yeah, he was elected last week, won the election. But what sort of happened since then is, and this is sort of a unusual thing about him, particularly in British politics, is he is a Christian.
Mm.
He's a very religious person.
Yeah.
He said that when he decided to...
Like the rest of the family.
Yeah. There's him and...
Ollie is so Christian, it's painful.
Godless, I think. And godforsaken. And he said, when he decided to run for the leader, he prayed to God and said, God, should I run to be Lib Dem leader?
Mm.
And he said, what the hell are you thinking? Of course not.
Don't shoot, bro.
And he didn't. A lot of people talking now, well, is he a suitable person to be a political leader if this is somebody who, before he makes big decisions, what should I do? He's consulting God.
I think it's very hard. Sorry, as I dropped my pen. It's very hard for me to try not to defend him, obviously.
Simon, what do you think?
But what I will say is that obviously I don't think you can base any politics based on a decision made by your religion.
No.
Absolutely.
But in America, you can't be elected president if you don't say
we've all got suspicions that Obama is not even a little bit
religious. Yeah, he's just towing
but
the
you
line,
have to
he?
Say it, because otherwise you will not be considered.
But here, if you say it, people That's think fine. Weirdo.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that if he has been at like political rallies since he was like 13, he knows the party inside out. He knows his stuff really well. It's not like some kind of, you know, inexperienced God basher coming in and making whimsical decisions based on his religion. I think that, you know, he's obviously saying that, yeah, he probably did pray the night before, but he's also had years of political prowess and worked his way up and really knows his stuff.
I don't doubt that.
I wouldn't be fearful that he's going to make rash decisions based on his religion.
I think he'd be too aware of how the media would portray any decision.
And also, he's all for, you know, I think the big thing, obviously, especially recently with, you know, equality in marriage.
Mm-hmm. Which is something in the past he's had a checkered history on. And then we had this interview, he was on TV the other day and was asked whether he thought gay sex was a sin.
Mm.
And he refused to answer the question, which would cause a lot of problems. I mean, in 21st century... Don't worry, Ollie. He'll still love you, your family. but he... hate the sin and not the sin. No, the other way around. But it caused a lot of problems because, you know, how can you be the leader, they'll say, of the liberal Democrats in the 21st century in 2015?
And frown upon.
Yeah.
So,
frown upon two people of the same sex.
Frown upon a form of love.
Yeah. Case for the defence?
Yeah.
Well, no, that's... Yeah.
Absolutely not. You know, you... In the 21st century, you've got to be for it. But he has come out and said he's pro...
Gay marriage.
Mm.
But then again, is that along the same lines as Obama saying I'm religious?
Mm.
You know, is he just towing the line on that?
Was he crossing his fingers behind his back when he said it?
Yeah, I don't know. But there is no way that you could be a leader in this day and age without at least visibly being seen to support.
Yeah, of course.
Marriage.
I think you're right.
So anyway, yeah, expect a few fireworks from him. And look forward to that family reunion for next time. Sister's wedding.
Suddenly you'll be talking to him all the time. Oh, Tim, it's been ages. Yeah. You want to catch up?
Yeah, especially when we go to...
We're doing this Sunday. I'm praying. Oh.
What about you, Tim?
What about the other cousins, Bob and Trevor's wedding?
Yeah.
hunting ban. I suppose still saying on kind of like big issues of the week in the news. Of course, this was the vote which was supposed to be happening to relax the rules on hunting foxes in England, basically bring it in line with Scotland, but it didn't go ahead because all the Scottish MPs said they'd vote against it, and that means it wouldn't have been passed. But it's just brought back this whole debate back into the news. You know, should we ban hunting? Should we relax the rules on it?
What are your personal views on it, Seb?
Well, obviously, as a journalist, I am completely neutral on all matters.
This is an ungoverned radio station.
Oh, is it? Oh, in that case, I don't think it's a particularly liberal rule, so I probably would like to see it repealed.
What, you'd like to see it back?
Yeah, it's very illiberal, the hunting ban.
Why?
This is interesting. That's why? Surprising.
What is it about it that you think...
I don't like the illiberal nature of it.
Yeah, well, embellish on that.
Well, I think people should have the freedom to hunt foxes in a certain way if they should be allowed to. I don't think the government should be allowed to say, no, you're not allowed to do that. Just as the government shouldn't be allowed to say, no, you're not allowed to smoke in public places.
What about when the government turned around and went, no, you can't fight with bears anymore?
When did they do that?
100 years ago.
Did they? I must have missed that piece. The Bear Act of 1850.
Bear fighting was a big thing.
Bear fighting was big in the Victorian era.
And they said, we can't do that anymore. Why? Because it's really fucking cruel.
All right, then. Well,
I think the thing
on,
I...
Well, in the same token, if we're talking about animal cruelty then, so, you know, I'm sure there are lots of people who are... And it does get people a lot of irate, and I accept that most people are against it. But are these people the same people who might eat battery-farmed chickens who are kept in awful conditions and probably subjected to worse conditions than a fox that is actually hunted and killed? Or what about animals that have cosmetics and medicines tested on them and can sometimes die just for their own sake?
I don't disagree with that, but you can't base a rule because it's happening to some, it's going to happen to others. And what I would say with this is that I think the hunting stinks of, like, upper class.
Oh, so it's class warfare.
Well, okay, so imagine, we were saying this last week, imagine a group of guys running down, you know, the middle of Leeds with hoodies on, and they let their staffies off the lead to chase a cat, and it ripped the cat to death. And that was
What's the difference? There isn't any difference.
Yeah, what's the difference? Oh, what, they're wearing red coats and drinking port and blowing trumpets?
Oh, we've always done it. We've done it for hundreds of years.
We used to have slaves.
Yeah.
I think for me, what scares me is the mentality of people that like the idea.
Yeah, no.
I think that's what I just clarify? We're in agreement with that.
Can I just clarify? It's not something I would do.
No, of course.
No,
we know that. We know that. Yeah. You don't have to say that to us.
But it's the point of my argument is I can't accept the illiberal nature of banning something outright, a blanket ban.
And what I will say is that I've grown up, like, I used to live on a farm with a family that were all hunters.
The point of killing foxes is to deter them from undoing a farmer's work, right? And there must be other ways.
Yeah, shoot him.
Which you're allowed to do.
Yeah, put a bullet in the head.
Yeah, but you're not allowed...
You can cull.
You're not allowed to watch and encourage dogs to tear the fox to shreds.
Anyway, the problem is that even though the ban's in place and has been for the last few years, and they're doing drag hunting, this scent hunting...
I know, yeah.
they lay the scent out, and it's like a running joke. Like, if you speak to someone that's on the hunt, they go, how was the hunt today? How was the scent hunting? They're like, yeah, the scent hunting was really,
Well, this is the thing. It's so hard to police, isn't it?
Yeah, no, you can't. And they don't. You know, they do kill foxes. It's just the attitude towards the whole thing. I went over to see my parents live in a rural area. I drove over and they were blocked. There was a hunt on this year and they were in the winter and they were blocking the junction to get into the village. They're all in the middle of the road, obviously waiting to go somewhere. And I pulled up and I was like, I signposted to the biggest twat I could see. And I said,
You're in the mirror again.
I was like...
And he started pointing back. I was like...
You're like, nice jacket.
Great earring. I thought you had it on the left.
I wound down the window and I said, excuse me, I need to get through there. And he said to me, he goes, you have to go the long way around, mate. I said, well, no.
No.
It's a public right of way. And he's like, no, you have to go the long way around. So I just started driving through.
Yeah. I just started driving through, and the horses sort of got, you know, sort of things. And one of them, and I guess halfway through, I felt quite spoken myself. And as one of them trotted up, it kicked up a stone and cracked my windscreen.
No way. There you go. It is. But there you go. You had the right of way to do it because we live in a free and liberal society.
I'm not convinced by that argument.
Unless we're asking your cousin. And finally, hashtag Froome. This is Chris Froome, of course.
Yeah, he got a pot of urine thrown in
yeah,
his face.
And
at least he was already wearing the yellow jersey, so he's got away with one there. But one day I'm wearing yellow. Phew!
This is, of course, the Tour de France, which is going on at the moment. Chris Froome doing particularly well. Of course, won it in 2013, didn't he?
Yeah.
So going for a second one. And the reason, of course, he had this urine thrown at him is because there have been all these rumours, completely unfounded, yeah. I should clarify, that, yeah, he's doped up, basically, and, you know, he's using drugs. And it did make me think, and I think it's rather depressing, I can't think of another sport which has been so badly tarnished, which one person's actions have so badly tarnished the reputation and diminished faith so much than Lance Armstrong.
It wasn't one person's actions, though.
I know, but...
It was rife. The whole sport was rife with doping, and he was made an example of.
But because he was the high-profile person who won it and had this amazing backstory of recovering from cancer to come back to win the Tour de France, and because he was held up as this inspirational figure... This person who'd managed to go through hell and come out the other side and actually go on to do so well. Once, you know, you completely lose your faith in almost like mankind.
Yeah. I think we should have two Tour de France. They solve all the problems.
The doped up one?
Yeah,
and
doped
the clean
up
one.
Ones and the clean ones. So the doped up, we'll see, give Dawn French a load of it and she'll be like, do it in 20 minutes. Just doesn't sweat for an hour and just does the whole thing in 1 hour.
You see the Vicarage and then we have the dominate the Mont Blanc climb.
And then in the normal one, we have it, you know, it takes several weeks and they do the stages. Just have two separate, the doped up and the non-doped
but
up.
But isn't it depressing that you, because the whole, I mean, I suppose it was quite similar with the 100 metres back in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s with Ben Johnson. You want to be able to watch that and believe what you're seeing is real.
Yeah, that's
true. And have that faith in that sport.
I know, but put yourself in this situation. You spend your whole childhood training to be a great cyclist. It's everything. It's night and day. You're out on your bike. Finally, you get through all the regional stuff. You get through, you come up onto the national profile, then you get a sponsorship, and then you get onto the pinnacle, which is the Tour de France, right? And you get onto a team. And at that point, your life is everything is pointing in that direction. There is nothing else. You get on that team, and then you realise that everyone is doping. The only way that you would have any chance of succeeding is by doping. You are non-competitive if you don't. Just bear with me.
Wasn't that the Hitler Youth argument?
Exactly. It's the same thing because everyone on your team is doing it. And the problem is if you don't, they don't want you on that team. They don't want somebody that's clean.
I would record them and out them all.
Yeah, but then you would be dropped by the team.
Fine.
Rather keep your dignity and your self-respect and your honesty.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm fine. But what I'm saying is the remaining lot, the only choice they have is to dope to compete at that level. And I also...
Yeah, but you'd lose the love for competing because it's not what you expected it to be.
What I'm saying
is... You would go, all right then.
Yes, but what I'm trying to say is that it's not... It's a fundamental flaw with the sport as a whole rather than an individual...
I know,
issue.
He has been put on a pedestal.
And what I will say about Lance Armstrong as well, there's no two ways about it. He was a...
Cheat.
He was a cheat, and he was nasty and narcissistic in ways that he went about things. But also, I don't think we can go, oh, you don't, mate. Cheat, like, you just... He did come back from cancer, and he did have those incredible feats that were enhanced by drugs, but I don't think it takes away entirely from...
It pretty much does.
Yeah. I literally zero respect for any of his accomplishments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I don't think you can use the argument of, you know, just because everyone else was doing it, it was okay for me. And if you're listening, the Queen, that includes you.
FUBAR! Giving radio the finger.
Loving can hurt. Loving can hurt sometimes.
but it's the only thing that I know. When it gets hard, you know it can get hard sometimes. It is the only thing that makes us feel alive. We keep this love in a photograph. We made these memories for ourselves, where our eyes are never closing, hearts are never broken, and time's forever frozen still. So you can keep me inside the pocket of your ripped jeans, holding me closer till our eyes meet. You won't ever be alone. Wait for me to come home. Loving can heal, loving can mend your soul, and it's the only thing that I know, know. We keep this love in a photograph. We made these memories for ourselves, where our eyes are never closing, hearts were never broken, time's forever frozen still. So you can keep me inside the pocket of your ripped jeans, holding me closer till our eyes meet. You won't ever be alone. And if you hurt me, that's okay, baby.
Big stories over the weekend was the Queen doing a Nazi salute.
What a sentence.
There's
that
no
is.
Other way
Never
to
thought
sort
I'd be saying that.
There's no way to ease that little number in.
Just to reassure, that wasn't like last week.
Yeah,
this
and
was,
you know what?
This was like 70 years ago.
I don't think they should have published that story.
Okay, so the story is, supposedly, 1933, I think the year is. So how old does that make her?
She was eight.
Right. Edward VIII... Is that her dad, granddad? I'm not really. I'm not really a fay with the royal sort of.
Yeah,
tree.
Was teaching them the Nazi salute in the garden.
Yeah,
but
seems obviously odd and weird.
No, but what's really important to remember at this point, and this is what's frustrating. Everyone's reacting to this. It was before the war,
before the Second World War. Yeah,
yeah. So it wasn't a negative thing at that time. It wasn't a negative thing. It's almost like, right, I've got to be careful how I say this, but. Like, at the time, the Hitler Youth, it was quite a positive thing in Germany. He was actually a pretty decent leader. Like, people looked up to him. People met him.
Imagine anyone just tuned in now.
Hitler was a decent leader.
What I'm trying to do is
like,
get my...
You know, this, he's a good guy.
But it's like people do... Like, kids do it. It's like the Mo Farah thing. Everyone was doing his sign, wasn't it?
It's not like Mo Farah, though.
What I'm saying is you see things, you're going to... If everyone's doing it, you're going to do it, aren't you? You're going to see it in the newspaper. You're going to see it on the TV. You're like, oh, go on, I'll give it a go. But this would... No, I know...
Oh, I'll try it.
It was...
Yeah, nailed it. Nailed it.
Yeah, but it was before the war. Okay...
Yeah,
so, but people are reacting.
It was 6 years before the war.
Yeah, but people are reacting to this like, oh, she's a Nazi sympathiser. She was an 8-year-old kid.
No, of course she's not. Of course she's not a Nazi sympathiser.
I don't think, and I don't know why they publish this. I don't know why now. I just don't see whose interest this is in.
Well, you know, it's a newspaper. They want to sell copies. If that is, if it's, you know, you have to select one amongst the crowd and you sort of glance over and see, you know, along with, you know, this week's page three also. The Queen salutes the Nazis. Like, you pick it up, probably, wouldn't you?
And that's what frustrates me, though. They never put it in context, do they? They don't go, 8-year-old Queen before the war salutes the Nazis.
No, exactly. This is how they. This is what they've put. They've put secret 90... So secret, right. Straight away, makes it sound like it's a covert operation. Secret 1933 film shows Edward VIII teaching the Nazi salute to the Queen.
Yeah, brilliant.
Makes it sound like he's passing on, like, some sort of philosophy.
There's loads of stuff like this. Like I was saying about Mo Farah, you know, if it turned out in 20 years' time that he was, you know, he did kill a load of Jews and people were doing the M sign, you'd be like, don't do that. But at the time, everyone was loving it. It's the same thing. It's like if they made a remake of Jim Will Fix It. No one's watching that. But at the time, everyone loved it because there was no negative connotation.
People aren't going for the shell suit, cigar and glasses look anymore. They don't go for the same look.
And there's loads of pictures of the royal family with Jimmy Savile.
Yeah, that's true.
High-fiving his dirty little fingers.
Oh, God.
It's true. No, but do you know what I mean? Context is key to everything. I know. And time...
I guess, like I said before, it's just so hard to imagine a time before the knowledge of what the Nazis were all about. And that is... The weirdest thing is that people like the Queen existed before it, and therefore they didn't know the implications of doing a Nazi salute.
But there were people in the war right up until the last year of the war that had no idea, that were Nazis. Mm. They didn't know what was happening.
No, that's true.
Because imagine if you were in that situation, you know, you grew up, you know, pre-World War II, and you were in the Hitler Youth. You're having a whale of a time. Like, if you put that in that yourself in that situation now, like, you lived in a little village somewhere, like, get rid of Facebook, get rid of, just block your mind out. Instagram, Facebook,
it's 1935.
Twitter. Yeah. You grow up in a small village somewhere. He comes in, he spruces up the village hall. Do you know what I mean? He gives you some really, really nice uniform to wear. You're going off on activities left, right and centre.
Playing football.
You're playing football, you're learning to sail. You're doing all these things you could never imagine of doing. It puts do's on Friday nights. You meet all the girls at the local social club that's been done up. You meet your future wife. You meet Hayley.
Yeah.
Guten Tag, Hayley.
Right. I've learnt how to speak German.
Yeah. Would you like some of my schnitzel?
Right.
Another.
Cheap joke.
That's a cheap joke. Well, no, it's, you know, it's a German delicacy. And then you know, this great guy. Do you know what I mean? You're walking around. You're not waving. You're putting your hand dead up straight to say hello to people, aren't you? Because this guy that's done all this stuff for you, you absolutely love. And then the war kicks off. Oh, those bloody roast beefs. Let's sort them out. Because this guy obviously knows what he's doing. Because he's just created this amazing... We love him. He's great. So you go off to... And you... So say, even though you do get into the war, and maybe very quickly you suddenly realise, hold on a minute, this guy is absolutely mental.
He's crackers. He's got delusions.
You're in too deep at that point. What are you going to do? Because your entire country, the law and order, the military, are all moving in one direction. Mm-hmm. There's no safe house. There's no, like, now, oh, it's fine to be left wing or it's fine to be right wing. Like, you're entitled to your opinions. No, we're going to war for these reasons.
Do you comply?
No one's going the other way. And if you came out and said, no, I don't want to be a Nazi anymore, Hayley, your children, everyone would be at risk because they'd just kill you. There's no, like, oh, yeah, no, don't worry. No, just, yeah, pack your bags, no problems.
It's an impossible question to ask because, you know, the knowledge now just impairs your judgment.
And you'd love to say, of course I wouldn't comply, of course I wouldn't go along with it. But, you know, the truth is that you...
But of all the...
Like so many people did, just you just get on with whatever you were told to do. Back then, anyway. I think now also, like we Facebook, Twitter, the freedom of speech, it's too hard for extremists... views to sneak under the radar. His snuck under the radar and he got away with it until the bitter end. And loads of people that actually maybe didn't even share his views were just brought along for the ride because that's how they're brought up or whatever.
No, and I think you're right. I think the internet caps this. It's like did Kim Jong-un just Photoshop himself next to a rocket? That's a bit odd.
Yeah, yeah. And people talk about him, people discuss, and they think more, less ignorant. So I think it's impossible for me to answer, but...
All I'm saying is, Simon, you definitely think you would have been a Nazi.
That's the line. That's the headline.
Let's
we're
just get a summary for the promo. Would you say you would have been a Nazi? Let's say yes.
I am 6 foot of blondish hair. So I would have served all right. I'd have looked all right. You know, I'd probably look better than Harry did in the uniform. You know what I mean? He looked like Norman from Fireman Sam in a Nazi uniform.
I'm surprised that the Sun didn't go as far as photoshopping Harry in his Nazi uniform onto that photo of the Queen doing the Nazi salute.
Well, that's good. He only came out this week. It is incredible footage. You can't help but just be like fascinated by it.
I just don't think it was that necessary. Was it?
How is it not a head?
It's if not public interest, is it?
Are you joking? It's the Queen doing a Nazi salute. Come on, how is that not? It's not public interest. Yeah, like it means nothing now, and people should realise that, but loads of people won't realise that. And if you're a newspaper and your job is to sell the newspapers, and you've got 20 to choose from when you walk into Tesco, you see a picture of the Queen going, Heil Hitler. I mean, it's too good to be true. It's like something from a movie.
It is like, you know, that awkward moment where, you know, we'll all have it at some point.
Do you think we'll have moments like this? So do you reckon in 50 years' time, when we're late 70s, 80 years old, and they uncover photos or recordings of us saying something, and they literally go, oh my God. And we'd have to defend ourselves and go, back then it was just like that. What would that be? Eating meat?
I think eating meat will be a big one.
Do you reckon that'll ever change? Yeah. Do you reckon everyone will become vegetarian?
Yeah, but only because they will make...
There'll be pictures of me like throwing steaks on the bar, be like Happy as Larry, and they're going to be going, oh, look, he's got blood, literally blood on his hands.
Only because they will make a meat substitute that is so good,
yeah,
that is nutritionally...
You can already not. You don't have to eat meat now to live off it.
The only way it'll be a success is if that Iceland can still make those shitty like sausage rolls and they taste the same. No one cares where it comes from. No. If someone creates something that's the same nutritional value and tastes the same,
yeah,
we will. It's just consumers will have it,
mm-hmm.
and that will happen. And then people will go, "You used to slaughter animals.
Yeah.
I had chickens at home. What? Yeah, we'd eat their periods. What?"
You fucking what? You animal? You absolute animal? You filthy, filthy animal? Do you reckon that'll be us when we're 80 and we'll be having to defend ourselves?
Maybe.
Look, it was just like that back then. You had cookbooks on your shelf telling you how to prepare the different animals.
You'd have events where you'd slow roast them on a spit.
So even now, you saying that makes me sad. It makes me feel like, oh Christ, this is.
But I don't...
Pictures of people rotating a whole pig at its head. Like, do you know what I mean?
But I don't understand, because you had a dog in the house and a baby lamb on the table. Like, what?
Yeah, you were stroking the dog, and if it died, you'd cry, yet you're eating chickens off the bone. You got the bone in your hand, just chowing down on its thigh.
Mental.
Maybe it is mental. Maybe we're going to not regret it, but we'll just have to defend ourselves when we're old.
Yeah, you're right. I think that's what it will be. Be me.
weird game to play to make me feel this way. What a wicked thing to do, to let me dream of you. What a wicked thing to say, you never felt this way. What a wicked thing to do, to make me dream of you. And I don't wanna fall in love, no, I don't wanna fall in love with you.
Fubar, Ollie and Simon here with you. Seb, our news reading pal, has popped in. Colleague, friend, bachelor,
tag along,
third wheel, whatever you want to call him.
I think you should have stopped a bit earlier on.
Two big stories about sharks in the last week. The first one, which is probably one of the biggest social media news stories I've seen spread that quickly, which was, I think it was Sunday afternoon, where Mick Fanning, champion surfer, was taking part in a big surf competition in South Africa, and it was live streamed on TV,
mm-hmm.
and
which had commentary and all the things you'd expect of a sporting
event. And he was attacked by a great white shark.
It was massive.
He reacted as the shark attacked him and punched it in the face.
Yeah, so the scene was that he was going out, he had a timed trial where he could go out and catch several different waves and do tricks and things, and he was swimming back out, like, you know, when they lie on their front and they just paddle with their hands.
So it wasn't part of the trick, the shark?
Yeah. And that was elaborate. It was two guys in a costume, yeah. like a cow, like one guy bent over behind, holding on to the guy in front.
Yeah. The shark had a billabong down the side of it.
He was just paddling on his board, and then literally like a film, as the camera shows him, from stage right you see this large fin of a shark appear, jaw style, and then suddenly mayhem. You see a tail come up. He actually attacks his board. He doesn't go for him, he goes for his board, chows down on it, he turns around, punches it in the nose, supposedly the most sensitive area of a shark. Maybe being a pro surfer and being, you know, a wise to it in South Africa, his instincts kicked in. He didn't just panic. Punched it in the nose, and he literally has zero scars, bruises to show for it.
But that's a lot of people get, oh, he's so lucky. No, he wasn't. He turned to face the shark head on,
and punched it.
Yeah. I mean,
the rest of us would be dead.
Oh God, yeah, you just panic and you know, that's it.
They had the shark was tagged because a lot of white sharks are tagged out there so they can monitor them for excavation reasons, and this one was believed to be 15 metres long.
15 metres?
Oh, is that feet? No, is it feet?
Yeah, right, I was going to say
15 feet.
I've just closed the article literally now. I'm looking at Seb Blatter with cash on him. 15 feet. 15 feet long.
Which is big.
He'll be seeing a few sharks soon, I think, Seb Blatter.
Did you see what do you call a pack of sharks together?
Oh, that's a good one.
A gaggle? A swarm?
Pack.
I don't know.
Wait a minute,
what's the collective noun for sharks?
I'll find out.
A
shiver.
Wow.
You could say school, but a shiver of sharks.
I was going to say school because she's a school fish.
Yeah, you could say school, but it's a shiver of sharks.
It would send a shiver up your spine, wouldn't it?
Did you see the shiver of sharks off the Suffolk coast? Did you see the video of
that? I thought it was Sussex.
Was it Sussex?
West Sussex it was.
There was 50 sharks, and it looks like something out of a movie.
It's unbelievable. This was filmed by a member of the RSPB called Peter. He was out there just checking.
Oh yeah, Peter from the RSPB.
He was just checking out. He was just checking out some birds.
Yeah.
Literally blue tits. And then he was looking round.
What was a cold
and
day?
And then he suddenly looked down at the river. I've got the video here to find what they predicted was around 50
blue
sharks.
Tits.
No sharks. These are specifically. What's the name of them? They've got a specific name. They're up to 5 feet long. They're called smooth hounds. They can grow up to 5 feet long, which is actually, you know, it's pretty. It's most of your up to your shoulder or whatever. 50 of them teeming. Look at the video footage there. It looks like piranhas.
Why are they off the coast of West Sussex?
Yeah, they're not meant to be there. They for some reason they couldn't really work it out. They're not even from the British coast.
No, they are predominantly found in the Gulf of Mexico.
But this is, don't they say, this is the problem that, you know, potential climate change, global warming, everything, is going to change our seas and our sort of maritime climate. So you might actually get more deadly sort of creatures like this coming over here by mistake because it's warmer.
It's a freak accident, but it's the fact that there's a whole shiver of up to 50 of them. Because, for example, the guy goes on to say, if I'd have spotted just one, it would have been like, wow. Yeah. Look, there's a shark in our waters, let alone 50. I mean, it's just madness. No one could have seen that coming.
Woke up cold one Tuesday. I'm looking tired and feeling quite sick. I felt like there was something missing in my day-to-day life. So I quickly opened the wardrobe. Pulled out some jeans and a t-shirt that seemed clean. Topped it off with a pair of old shoes that were ripped around the seams. And I thought these shoes just don't suit me. Hey, I put some new shoes on and suddenly everything's right. I said, hey, I put some new shoes on and everybody's smiling. It's so inviting, oh, short on money but long on time. Slowly showing in the sweet sunshine. And I'm running late and I don't need an excuse. So I'm wearing my brand new shoes. Woke up late one Thursday and I'm seeing stars as I'm rubbing my eyes. And I felt like there were 2 days missing as I focused on the time. Then I made my way to the kitchen, but I had to stop from the shock of what I found. The room of all of my friends all dancing round and round. And I thought, hello, new shoes, bye-bye and blues. Hey, I put some new shoes on and suddenly everything is right. I said, hey, I put some new shoes on and everybody's smiling. It's so inviting, no short on money but long on time. Slowly showing in the sweet sunshine. And I'm running late and I don't need an excuse. So I'm wearing my brand new shoes. Take me wandering through these streets where bright lights and angels meet. Stone to stone they take me on. I'm walking till the break of dawn. Take me wandering through these streets where bright lights and angels meet. Stone to stone they take me on. I'm walking till the break of dawn.
finally everything is right. I said, hey, I put some new shoes on and everybody's smiling, it's so bright. And oh, short on money but long on time. Slowly strolling in the sweet sunshine. And I'm running late and I don't need an excuse. So wearing my brand new shoes. Oh, hey, I put some new shoes on and suddenly everything is right. I said, hey, I put some new shoes on and everybody's smiling, it's so inviting. Oh, short on money but long on time. Slowly strolling in the sweet sunshine. And I'm running late and I don't need an excuse. So I'm wearing my brand new shoes.
Comparing those two shark incidences, though, obviously no one was sort of involved or affected by the 50 sharks off West Sussex coast. But you know, the have you heard the famous conundrum, would you rather be attacked by a horse-sized duck or 10 duck-sized horses?
I have now.
Okay, good. What about this then? So you've got sharks in different forms. How about a boat with your friends on and you're in the water 50 metres away, so like an Olympic pool-sized away.
That's quite a long way, isn't it?
You've got a 15-foot great white shark lingering around. You've spotted its fin. It's sort of about.
Yeah.
Or you've got these sharks. There's about 50 of them. Some of them 5 feet, some of them 3 feet, various sizes. They will, you know, they do eat other fish.
Mm.
They could go for you if you were acting a bit. Would you rather be in the sort of swarm, in the shiver of the sharks, or would you rather be in the sea 50 metres away with a great white?
I've got to go for the horse-sized duck. I don't know, because
what would you do? So say if you're just like treading water,
yeah.
You can see the boat. You've either got 50 smaller sharks around you that would, if you stayed there forever, they would just nibble you and you'd die.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you've got this devastating beast that is sort of lingering about. You don't know whether he's eaten. He might not eat for several days. That's how they work.
I'd probably take out the Swiss Army knife I always carry around with me, kill one of the smaller sharks, and then all the other sharks would go for that one, and I'd swim to safety.
No, you are just in your trunks. That's it.
Are you not?
Trunks and that's it.
I always carry my weapon with me, even in my trunks.
Trunks and that's it. What are you doing? What's your...
Probably the smaller ones you go for, wouldn't you?
Why?
Why? Because, you know, you'd feel like you might be able to punch them off, and then because they're smaller, and then swim to safety.
But if you're in and amongst 50, even if they're not biting at you, like you see there, they're all on the surface.
Mm.
It's going to be hard to not disrupt them while swimming towards the boat.
Well, I'd swim gently.
Breaststrokes. On occasion, like really calm breaststroke.
Like your mum swims because you don't want to get held.
Yeah. Slowly tread water.
His head never disappears underwater.
Why? Why? What would you rather?
What would you do, Al?
I go for the great white.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? What's your tactic then? It's lingering about. You've seen it underneath. It's never come at you. It's just about. It's just there.
I mean, I've shit myself already. Yeah. And I know I've not... I know.
I'm wearing swim shorts.
Is that to try and make the water a bit more darker so we can't see?
No, I know that's
not... It's going to smell that and it's going to leave.
Oh, I'm well aware that that has not helped the situation.
Mm-hmm.
But
you will be keeping your head above water, won't you?
But I had no control over that.
You should.
Like, your bowels would empty immediately, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
Well, that South African surfer didn't, did he? He was fully intact.
No, but he's the man that turned around and punched the shark in the face. I'm not that man, right? So
what would you do?
I'm just going to be honest. So, fight or flight? Well, flight, obviously.
Swim?
Flight.
Me and Seb are on the boat. Fucking hell, mate, come on! Come on! Quick!
Yeah, so, but I'm...
It's yours!
I think also, the reason I choose a great white is because...
Why don't we get the boat towards him?
We're anchored.
Oh,
we
right.
can't be fucked to move. We've got a beer.
You're wankered.
We're anchored. Right? We can't be fucked to move. We've got a beer in our hands. We're like, oh...
I mean, I've watched a lot of wildlife documentaries recently, and, like, the conditions have to be, like, pretty... Sharks don't just attack, like, big ones. Like, the conditions have to be right for it. So I kind of hedge my bets on one, because I do think Seb's right. If there's a lot of them, if one starts to have a nibble, it will get them all into a bit of a frenzy. Whereas one shark is probably a bit more chilled.
But that could be one devastating swipe.
Absolutely, but I'm going to take that risk.
Drag you under. None of these little sharks could drag you under. You could maybe, they might chow down, but you might be able to push them off.
Once they start going, you can't swim through. It's a frenzy. Like they take over. Like they would.
Stop punching them in the nose.
No,
one by one.
Too many.
It'd be like that machine you get at like bowling alleys where you hit the hammer on the top of the beavers.
Whack-a-mole.
Yeah, that's it.
They keep coming. And so I think I'd take the risk with the great white. And I'd probably ask you guys to help out.
No, we wouldn't.
I'd say, firstly, come here, put that beer down and come over here. Also, blood. Like we're saying this, get some blood in the water.
Yeah, actually, I spoke to him before. I said, what I'd do is I'd shout back to you. I'd stay treading water calmly. Because my thing is I'll probably fight rather, even though I couldn't fight a great white, of course I couldn't. If I do the flight thing, I'll probably get an asthma attack and die anyway. So I'll go for a fight because I'm not, asthma's holding me back.
If you're going to go, surely you'd rather go being eaten by a shark than an asthma attack, wouldn't you? You know, just so it sounds more dramatic.
Not being eaten alive or I can't breathe anymore.
Isn't it a weird thought to think that if it came at you and, like, took a big bite, like your head would go in and it just bit you in half? Isn't that a horrible thought that for a little while
you would know what it feels like?
You'd be conscious inside the shark, knowing that you're going to die, descending to the depths.
Yeah,
a little part of you would be inside a shark.
Yeah. I can't get my head around it. It's just like, it's like staring at the stars for too long. You just freak yourself out for a bit. It's a bit weird.
So what would you do?
Is there a worse feeling than that? is there any point? Because I've had some, you know, like sometimes when you fall off your bike and you have enough time to go, this is really going to hurt, you know, or you have an accident.
Mm.
Seeing the inside of a shark,
it's
all over.
Yeah.
I am in a right pickle.
I've no chance of getting out of this.
I am in a right old pickle here.
My tactic would be to tread water calmly and I'd shout, Seb or Ollie, cut your finger and drop a bit of blood outside the other side of the boat.
What am I cutting it with?
Anything.
What? Look around you now. What am I cutting my finger with?
On a boat?
Paper.
Fish hooks, paper.
Oh, I don't like paper cuts, though.
Seb Swiss Army knife he carries on him all the time.
Exactly.
Like, put that in front of you now. No, I don't want to give myself...
Sorry, you don't like a paper cut? I've got jaws lingering around my fucking ankles. So I'd say drop some, and then because sharks will zone in on like blood particles from miles away.
Yeah, but then you've got to swim towards the blood.
But if you did it on the other side of the boat, I would think
as if the shark couldn't
that
see
that make all the difference, wouldn't it?
I can't see. You do realise there's nothing under the boat.
Well, actually, I see what you've done there, because what you'll do cleverly is you'll attract the shark to go towards the boat and then me and Ollie will be dead and then you'll be able to swim to safety.
If anything, just given him an appetizer. You've given him a starter.
A little taste of what Seb's about.
Ollie Gallant and Si Alexander on FUBAR Radio.
Stop me, stop me. Stop me if you think that you've heard this one before. Stop me, stop me. Stop me if you think that you've heard this one before. Cause nothing's changed. I still love you. Oh, I still love you. Only slightly, only slightly less than I used to, my love.
look back at the last 7 days on planet Earth. Ollie and Simon here with you. There's been so much great stuff this week. We've had the new images of Pluto, and then we had the asteroid, which is full of platinum.
The money chucked over Seb Blatter's face.
We had the robot with the first artificial intelligence that was self-aware.
Yeah.
We had the Queen doing a Nazi salute.
It just doesn't get better than that.
Yeah. Sometimes I look at the news, I just go, thank you.
Oh, thank you very much for this.
That's an absolute gem.
Yeah.
Simon and I, in our sort of full-time capacity, we do radio full-time for different radio stations. And in the commercial stations that we work in, there's often branded content like competitions that we do. And we've been doing one this week, which is your three-word DIY disasters.
Yeah.
Where people text.
Yeah, in summing up their worst disasters with DIY in just three words.
Yeah.
To like intrigue us, entice us.
Yeah, yeah. And then, like, we randomly pick four people in the week and they win a big prize to go and spend at, like, a DIY store. And it's great because people.
They love it, yeah.
Yeah, they love it. They get really, really creative with it. Just before we came on air today, one of the guys that we work with had overheard it. And he goes, oh, yeah, do you hear of my DIY disaster?
Who is this? Was this someone out here in the office?
Yeah, this is Pete.
Oh, okay.
Have you heard this?
No, Pete from accounts.
He's brilliant. Because recently I fitted a dishwasher last week and I went to some dark places that day where it did work and it didn't work and there was burst water pipes and then there was the elation of thinking it had been working and then I put the wrong pipe on and then I had to go back to the drawer. It's emotional DIY.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think you
invest a lot of time when it doesn't work. You really beat yourself up.
You learn a lot about yourself, yeah. You know, doing that sort of stuff. And Pete said to me, he goes, yeah, I had a real corker. And I kind of thought to myself, oh, it's not going to be that good. It's not going to be that good.
No offence, Pete, if you're listening, but you know.
He was decorating the hallway and they put like a nice dark blue carpet and a light blue, like a magenta wall all around.
Magenta pink.
Oh, okay. Okay, so let's say it was a light blue around the wall. So dark blue carpet, light blue walls.
Yeah. Maybe sea and sky.
Yeah, but yeah, that's it. And he painted it all himself and had the carpet fitted.
Mm-hmm.
It's all done. And they had a phone on the wall. And so at the end he was like, oh, I better take the phone off and paint behind it just so the job's like complete because you could see the edges slightly. So he unscrewed the phone out the wall, lifted it off, and of course that bit was still the same colour. So I took that phone off, went and had dinner. I was like, oh, I'm going to come back and I was doing the washing up and cut his finger on a glass while he was doing it.
Right.
So he's no problem. Sort of bandages it up, and comes back out to the thing, and gets the bucket of paint, like the big tin of paint that's the right colour for the wall. And undoes the lid on it. And as he's lifting the thing up, there's still a bit of glass in his finger that he's not removed. And the pain of it, sudden shooting pain, he drops the full pot of
light blue paint. On
of which, as it hits the floor, it sends then a shockwave of paint up over Pete, on his face, over his body, over the walls, and then tips over. And
all just empties onto
the carpet.
Oh,
right?
My God.
And you do that thing. And we've all done it in life where you have that moment where you just stop and you don't do anything. You don't move. You don't breathe because you genuinely just think.
You can't believe what's happened. You can't literally believe what's happened.
You just stood there as paint dripping off your face and you go, oh, I fucked it. Yeah. And you just don't know what to do because how do you get 3 litres of paint out of the carpet? And
you don't. So you just got to replace it all.
His wife comes out and her initial reaction is not, it's not empathetic, it's just angry.
Yeah.
But he stood there covered in paint.
He's got a bloody thumb.
She slams the door, goes back in the kitchen, and he just does that thing where he sort of meanders over to the stairs, just sits in, just so despondent, just sits down on the stairs, puts his head on his lap, puts his hands on his face, just sits there, you know, like slumped.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And he just sits there. About half an hour later, his wife comes out. She feels bad at this point. Yeah. She knows that he's upset. And she goes, you know, you're right. Do you want a cup of tea? And as he goes to get up.
isn't real.
Yeah. The paint's set and his hands are stuck to his face.
That's too good to be true. There's no way.
No,
he sat slumped in his hand and then it stuck to his face.
So he brought back to the kitchen with both of his palms on the side of his face.
That is dreadful. Poor Pete. I mean, mate.
Isn't that just a...
Well done, buddy.
It's great, isn't it?
My dad's a big DIYer. Everything in our house is dad. Like, he trained as a carpenter. He can do just a bit of everything. I don't know how. He just acquired all the knowledge. He can do absolutely everything. He's excavated the garden. He's built lofts. He's done bathroom conversions, the lot.
I'm really jealous of people that can do that.
Yeah, I am. I don't know where he takes the time to learn it. And I should probably, you know, eventually sit... You know, when I move out, when I move house, he will be in his element because he'll come around and he'll teach me with all of his tools how to do everything. But there was one infamous occasion, my mum still references it now, where he got it wrong. And he rarely gets it wrong. He was building a brand new porch on the front of the house. So brick by brick, a porch to, you know, just a little like nice bit where you pop an umbrella and a few pairs of shoes and your wellies in. Just built one out at the front of the house. He counted the bricks wrong when he was like two thirds of the way up. There was no going back. Like, it was either literally do it wrong and like put the door in a different place, or wait for the cement to set. So wait several weeks unfinished, wait for it to set, and then knock it down with a hammer. So there was this really tragic moment, I still remember it now, with a sledgehammer, him literally crying, just like just like literally from like 6 foot high of wall that he'd built, smashing it all down. I mean, it was just this despondent mess, and it was just tragic. At that point, I thought, like, the at any point if it goes wrong, like the devastation of it going wrong is too much to take.
Yeah, it's your pride intact,
yeah,
isn't it?
Like,
yeah.
The psychology of coming back again the next day and building the porch.
The neighbour came around and go, what are you doing there, Paul? Yeah. Oh,
I'm just
knocking
just
down the wall.
Just smashing down the wall that I wrongly built. It's just depressing. It's so depressing.
I want you by my side so that I never feel alone again. They've always been so kind, but now they brought you away from me. I hope they didn't get your mind. Your heart is too strong anyway. We need to fetch back the time they have stolen from us. And I want you, we can bring it on the floor. Never danced like this before. We don't talk about it, dance on. Do the boogie all night long. Stands in paradise. Shouldn't talk about it. I want you, we can bring it on the floor. Never danced like this before. We don't talk about it, dance on. Do the boogie all night long. Shining anymore. The only thing I feel is pain caused by absence of you. Suspense controlling my mind. I cannot find the way out of here. I want you by my side so that I'll never feel alone. Do the boogie all night long. Dancing paradise.
Alexander on FUBAR Radio. This is FUBAR. Ollie and Simon here as we take a look back at the last 7 days on planet Earth. Of course, we had the up-close and personal images of Pluto for the first time ever.
Not the Disney doll.
No.
The former planet.
The dwarf planet. And they found mountains on there, which they think there's a possibility that they could have been created by heat, which means that there could still be heat on the planet, and that would be a massive discovery, and they're still getting through the data now. The the satellite or spacecraft that went past New Horizons got 8,000 kilometres. That's how close it got to the
away.
Planet.
Yeah, 8,000 kilometres away from it.
But the interesting thing now is that that is on its way off into outer space.
Yeah, it's continuing.
And it still will be sending data
back. It's amazing
back.
That it's still working.
I know.
Just like, it's been gone for, what, 9 years or so?
And do you know what? That annoys me because, do you know what I mean? Like, sometimes I can't get 3G anywhere.
Yeah, compared to that, he's near Pluto and he's sending picture messages back.
Yeah, I'm trying to send a Snapchat and no joy. Do you know what I mean? I can't even send an SMS.
Yeah.
And we're still pinging.
Got a robot by Pluto sending text messages back.
HD images back from Pluto. Who's taking up all the bandwidth? I wonder.
Yeah, well, I could tell.
And then another story came along, which was asteroid UW158. It's passing the planet pretty close by.
Passing Pluto?
No, our planet, this asteroid.
Okay.
1.5 million miles away, which is really close.
It doesn't sound close, you know, it doesn't sound, you know, next door. If my mate said, oh, do you want to come round? I just moved house. Oh, whereabouts? Oh, just 1.5 million miles away. I'd go, oh, I'm
okay, well, if you look at it
busy, I'm busy.
If you look at it in these terms, that's 30 times closer than our nearest planet.
Okay. Oh, that. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Now here's the interesting bit: the asteroid, which measures about half a mile across, has a core made of platinum.
Is that big for an asteroid?
What's that?
Half a mile across.
Yeah, I guess that's a reasonably big one. But this is the interesting thing: the core of it is made of platinum. So, do you have any idea what that's worth? They're estimating about 3.5
trillion pounds worth in the centre of the asteroid. How fast is it travelling?
Fast.
What are you going to do? How do they know that? How can they?
Well, private companies are already making moves towards mining it. There are.
How do you mine it? It's moving like through.
Well, no, but we landed on an asteroid this year, didn't we?
I know, but mining it and bringing stuff back from it, that's a different game.
But the satellites, they have, you know, they do it already when they land on. You know, they have robots out on the space station.
I know, but landing on a moving asteroid...
They've got that roving thing on Mars that can take... It can harvest things and take them back to the laboratory. You've got to remember that the money's there to do this. The investment is there.
So how do they even go about taking some platinum off an asteroid and bringing it back?
Well, no. What I'm saying is the technology is there to do it. There is just a dilemma now about certain private companies are on their way. Next time it passes by, they want to harvest it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, there is the 1967 Space Treaty. Okay. So this means that almost all countries have signed this, saying that no nations can claim, because suddenly there's this whole piece of land. And on planet Earth, you can't just go claiming shit.
No, you can't just walk around and go, I'll have that. Yeah. I'll have that park with the swings, they're mine.
Now, it says that no nations can claim a celestial body, such as a asteroid.
So when they put a flag on the moon, that was just a... Yeah, means nothing.
No, America don't own it.
Mm. No, I know. They don't own the moon.
Yeah.
No.
That doesn't mean anything.
Fine.
But the treaty didn't say anything about companies, corporations, firms.
Well, no, they probably never expected to have to worry about this.
Private entities. So a company could go up there and claim the asteroid and harvest it for $3.5 trillion. That is a moral dilemma, isn't it?
Is it a moral dilemma? If they've got the money and the nous about them to get the technology to go up there and claim the platinum with no rules in place and bring it back... What's the moral dilemma? Because it's not, if it was like, you know, the Earth was running out of water and they went up and got a load of it and took it for themselves, then you could understand the moral dilemma of that. But the moral dilemma of going up and taking some platinum.
I suppose it's to do with the wealth related to it, that person would suddenly be worth 3.5.
They've invested the money and the technology in getting there.
Imagine if he's a crazy right-wing Nazi sympathiser. Right, and suddenly he's got $3.5 trillion.
Yeah,
I'm just saying it's too much money for one person to have.
So
it's going to cause problems back on planet Earth.
They surely can't excavate the whole thing. They can't take the whole asteroid.
They'll be making some serious dollar if they get up there.
So if they took like a square foot of platinum off there, that's what, a couple of billion. probably.
Yeah.
In a square foot's worth of it. So if they went up and brought that back, you'd get a billionaire on your hands. Now, what could we ever do about that? How could we? They have the money, the foresight, and the nous about them to spend the money on technology to go up into out of space to retrieve some platinum from a bit of rock that was passing through, bring it back, and then sell it. Where's the moral dilemma? What's morally, you know, how is that immoral? What's the immorality of it?
I suppose I would. It's just the idea of someone having that much wealth on planet Earth. It would impact people here.
Yeah. If they were to excavate the whole lot, yeah, he'd be the richest person that ever lived. But surely, if you can only take a little bit...
I almost feel if it's something like that, it's like an asteroid, it's not on planet Earth, is there no way as a collective we could go, do you know what, it's something that's not here, so why don't we harvest it, like the UN harvest it, and we use that money... To
spread it about.
America turn around and go, all right, yeah.
Greece is in debt. Give Greece the big...
Give Greece a bit.
Bit of platinum, here you go.
Do you know what I mean? Africa, they're not growing any vegetables. Give them a bit.
Yeah.
Like, is there a way that we could...
Well, so should after this a rule come into play where you have to bring it back and you only get like a certain percentage of the cut or something?
Yeah, that's a good idea. And there's like a... And I know that people go, okay, brilliant. Well, even if you give the UN the fund, it's like comic relief. It'll always get into the wrong hands anyway. Mm. But it's a nice idea, isn't it?
It is, yeah. If that can be harnessed, then yeah. But at the minute, it's hard to see past how anyone can just go and take it for themselves. Because it's a new rule to have to deal with. But I'm guessing that if they went up and did... When is it? Like this week or something?
It's going past this week.
Yeah.
But that's not when they're going to harvest it. They're doing tests. Things at the moment, so I guess it'll be next time it comes round, because obviously it'll be in an orbit, won't it?
Right. It's unfathomable, isn't it, what they're doing? Like, that is... Then, if you're asking bigger questions, if everything became so harvestable, would it devalue the worth of it at all?
Platinum? No, you're right, mate. It's everywhere.
You're right, mate. My house is covered in the stuff. I'm literally kind of... I'm eating with platinum knives and forks, got platinum doorknobs.
Platinum wheelbarrow.
I've got like a fragmented platinum loafer to scratch my back. I don't know what... I've got too much platinum to go around.
Actually, you know, I didn't realise. I heard the other day, I was learning about diamonds, and there was... basically, they learnt how to make man-made diamonds, like...
Right, in a lab.
60 years ago. Like, yeah, kind of composite. And basically, it just devalued diamonds everywhere.
Yeah, that makes sense, because as soon as the technology's there, then everyone can do it, then suddenly it's not worth it anymore. So if they can start too easily harvesting platinum, it'll just become pointless.
So they went and buried, the big companies behind it just went and buried a load of diamonds in the sea.
Really?
Just got rid of them. So that then they could create the market again. And using clever PR and marketing, kind of the idea of that a diamond's a girl's best friend, that was just all PR baloney.
Yeah.
And brought the value of the market back up again.
That's clever that they did that, though. It makes sense for the value of the diamond to come back up. I love the idea that on the seabed, though, there's like a billion diamonds and just like crabs walking around with like blinged up pincers and lobsters with like... Well, they like those cages that like Goldie has. Like, on his, he's in the teeth on him! Yeah, it's diamond studded, mate.
Gold pincers. Yeah. I was diving the other day and I'm sure I saw a shark cruising on massive alloys with diamond studs in them.
But we're free. We dream
7 days on planet Earth. The three wisest sages in the land were brought before the king to see which one of them were worthy to become the king's advisor. After passing many tests of cunning and invention, they were pitted against each other in the final battle of the wits, Simon. Led blindfolded into a small room, the sages were seated around a small wooden table as the king described the test for them.
So, small room, table, three men sat round it blindfolded. Right. Okay.
Upon each of your heads, I have placed a hat. Now you are either wearing a blue hat or a white hat. All I will tell you is this. At least one of you is wearing a blue hat. There may only be one blue hat and two white hats. There may be two blue hats and one white hat, or there may be three blue hats. Right. But you may be certain that there are not three white hats. I will shortly remove your blindfolds and the test will begin. The first to correctly announce the colour of the hat shall be my new advisor. Be warned, however, he who guesses wrongly shall be beheaded.
Wow, that is quite a... You've posed this to me a moment ago, and I think I've worked it out. I think this makes sense, okay? If... Let me draw this. If we have the three men with the hats on...
Yeah.
If they align themselves... So if they stand in a line, like that, I'm just drawing three dots, then, and they've all got their different hats on, if the guy in the middle is looking at the guy at the front, and say the guy at the front's got a white hat, then the guy in the middle can ask the guy at the back, can you see a blue hat? And if the guy at the back goes yes, he knows he is wearing blue.
Yeah.
And he knows the colour of his own hat.
Clever.
Can that work?
Yeah.
I mean, aside from the fact you could just say, oi, mate, what's my hat? Can you just say that? Oi, buddy, what colour comes to mind? And just point at your hat and then hopefully they'll say, does that make sense?
Yeah.
Is that correct?
There is only one case which forces the three sages to sit in silence. Three blue hats.
Yeah, that's impossible to work out. Yeah, that is impossible. Isn't it?
Yeah.
Ah, that's so annoying. Because you don't want to give it away.
But if you know that, and you're all sat in silence, then you would know that there's three hats, and you are the genius.
Oh, that's true. Jeez, that is tricky on the mind, though, isn't it? That is a tough one.
So, I want, based on that, and how complex that is, and the reason we've done that, is this week, a robot... completed that task. It was the...
So instead of three wise men, they led three robots into a room?
Yeah.
Are you joking?
A robot passed the first self-awareness test.
Oh my goodness. So they went into a room with two other robots and did this experiment?
Yeah, so the robots were all sat together. Now, the test was slightly different for the robots. They were... It was to do with a sound, so they muted... each of them. Two were prevented from talking. Then all three of them were asked which one was still able to speak. Okay.
Right.
But they'd given them, like, they hadn't actually muted them. They'd said to them, you won't be able to talk.
Right. Okay.
Okay. But
surely they can program them to.
So basically, they've got an operating system. So they're not designed for this task. They have an operating system, like a personality, and they can complete tasks. Then they threw this task at them.
Right.
So it's not that they weren't built for this task.
Okay.
It's not a trick.
Yeah, yeah.
They had to, but the weird thing is that, so two were prevented from talking, then all three were asked which one was still able to speak. One of them had been given a placebo effect, a placebo pill.
Yeah.
So they thought they couldn't talk, right? All attempt to say, I don't know, but only one succeeds. And when it hears its own voice, though, this is the weird thing. There's a slight pause. It hears its own voice. It stands up and it says, sorry, I know now.
Whoa. So it recognised that his own voice spoke and that he shouldn't have been speaking.
Hearing his own voice made him realise.
And that made him realise that
that's what I'm trying to explain.
Oh my goodness. So he was told he couldn't speak. He tried to speak, but then realised he was the robot realised he was speaking.
Yeah. Which is a form of self-awareness.
That is a bit scary. Stephen Hawking said a few months ago
yeah.
that the inevitable downfall of humans may be creating machines that will overcome them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that to me still sounds too far-fetched to compromise. Yeah, it's too film-like, too fantasy.
Well,
but that things like that are the beginning, aren't they? They're like the premise of the movie before the credits come in, at the very beginning, like how it all began.
Did you see that film with Joaquin Phoenix, Her?
No.
Where he falls in love with the robot?
No.
It's very, very clever. And similar to another film that I watched recently, I'm not going to be able to remember the name of it, but it was basically about an artificial girl, and they perform a test of whether this boy can fall in love with her. It will come to me in a minute. And it does make you think that if they can comprehend oneself, then why couldn't you, how far would that personality go?
Yeah.
And they say that you do fall in love
with... And then if they started, you know, if one grew up in New York City and one grew up in London, that robot would take on a different influence of stimulus, wouldn't it? So its character and its personality, much like a human, would be different in one destination compared to another.
Yeah. And, you know, they can make
Carl,
things...
Carl, this puts to shame the fact that you call your new dishwasher a robot.
Well,
jeez.
Well, I mean, it cleans things while I'm out. It's the perfect relationship.
Yeah, it can't comprehend oneself, can it? Jeez.
But put yourself in that situation, because this time will come. Say we're 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the line,
yeah.
Okay, but you're in a parallel life now, so you're, you know, you went through your single years where you were just like, you know, sat at home watching Toy Story on your own.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, sounds great.
And then you buy one of these robots because you think, actually, it'd be good to have one around the house. Like I
do
can...
some cleaning.
Yeah, like, yeah. Okay, so it can do some cleaning around the house. It can cook dinner with you, but you can have conversations with it. Imagine that robot had the personality of Hayley.
No, this is weird. It's just getting weird. No, this isn't normal, though, is it? You can't have relationships with...
Why not?
Artificial. It's artificial
Why
reality because it's not reality. That is not reality.
But where does reality... Surely, it's only as... if someone is self-aware, okay, then the development of emotions is the next thing. So if something has feelings, why is it not real?
Oh.
So you find...
This is like TED 2. This is like TED 2, the premise of TED 2, the movie.
You find yourself falling in love with this robot. She looks all right. She's aesthetically pleasing. Do you know what I mean?
Bit robotic with her movements, bit like...
The only thing is
can you pass me the milk? Certainly.
Here you go, Simon. The only weird... No, she'd talk normally.
Just right. Like,
the only weird thing is, you know, after you make out, you have to plug her in.
Oh, God. Oh, I can't... Ugh.
But I think the biggest thing with that is that you would have genuinely normal feelings. I think if you did fall in love with that robot... And you have, you know, all those tiny little things, you know, those nuances in relationships, you know, like that, that everyone has their own language, don't they? Like no one else could translate.
Yeah.
You know, you have that. You have those little jokes, like you're chasing each other around the flat.
Do you remember that time I took you out to the supermarket and I forgot your battery? Do you remember? Oh, no, you can't remember because your battery was gone. But
I think the biggest problem would be telling everyone else. Because the best part...
Essentially fucking a robot. I mean, is that what you mean?
The best part of a relationship is to share it with family and friends, isn't it?
Wow.
So,
some stuff.
How do you sit your mum and dad down and tell them that you're in love with a robot?
Mum, dad, this I just wanted to bring you today to introduce you to R372.
First thing your dad as a joke. Has she got a sister? Like classic dad jokes.
She's got an older sister.
Yeah, but Paul!
This is R7272. She would like to say hello. And she would just speak like a normal human being.
Really nice to meet you. I've learnt so much about you. And have jokes with your mum about you because she's learnt about you. She's just a normal... It's just Hayley, but she gets plugged in at night. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, this is the start. And what's wrong with that? If that robot brought you as much...
What's wrong with that is if she flipped out, she could crush me in her sleep.
No, if that robot brought you as much fulfillment as the real Hayley, then what is wrong with that? I'm not saying Hayley's been...
I guess there's nothing wrong with it. I just cannot comprehend. It's too abstract. I know it's like it sounds like... Well, it's not close, but, you know, they're getting there with this sort of stuff. Why? I don't know. What is it, just because it's the feat? Is it just the feat of engineering? Like, how far can we go with this? Because it's not that practical, is it? It's not like we need them. Is it just literally, scientists and... You know, technology guys out there just going, let's see how far we can go with this and make a robot.
No,
but I can't get my head around it. Having a relationship with a robot.
It's the practicality of its operational limits. So say you had a soldier, there's no point in having programmed because they'd have to make decisions. Do you know what I mean? Mm. They come to a wall and an intelligent robot would say, oh, am I going to climb this wall? Or actually, is there a threat there? Should I go round or should we go back? Or it would have to make logical decisions.
I just... Or would you? Would you go? Would you potentially go out with a robot?
I guess, like, if I think what would happen.
What would happen? Do you, like, order one and, like, put your personality in? Or how would it work?
Yeah, that's a good point.
But like, would you have to, like, go online and say, like, oh, I'd like the blonde hair, 5'7"?
But you never know what your
breast size.
Well, no, that bit's all fine.
Like, I mean, where does it stop? Where does it stop, though? Like, are you allowed to, like, manufacture, like...
Hi there. I did receive the new robot a week ago. She's having a few issues standing up. Is that a gyro problem?
Well, that's the thing. Like, where would it stop? Would you choose the eye colour? Would you choose the breast size? Would you choose how tall they are? Like, it's crazy. Like, where would it stop? Or would you just get what you're given? Because you'd have to fall in love with it.
Yeah, and what, like, mental age do you want it? Because obviously a 60-year-old would be different to a 12-year-old.
Because the mental age of a 60-year-old with the looks of a 20-year-old.
Yeah, now
it's mind-blowing. It's too much to comprehend. Do they go to school? If they can embrace life and they can embrace stimulus around them, do they go to school? Do they learn? Or do you just get, like, Wikipedia and just plug it into them, just like a chip?
And then what are their rights?
Do they vote?
No, like, I've taken up pottery. And the new husband goes, but I thought...
I'd rather you didn't.
I thought I'd see you on Tuesday nights. And she goes, yeah, but I'd like to go to pottery. No.
I'm your master. Oh, no!
It's so weird,
no,
isn't it?
No, it's too weird. It's too weird. I can't, no. This can't
happen.
Happen. It cannot happen.
And they'll have to have their own rights.
They'd have to vote.
And then eventually maybe...
Then would robots start...
Dating robots.
They couldn't have children.
Couldn't they? Just make one. They could just build another one.
Or just go online and build
another
one.
And download their data and there's a baby.
No! No! This is crazy. This is crazy.
Cy Alexander on FUBAR Radio.